Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckless AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy on call. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, a quick turn after the watch party on Saturday night. Great to have you back with us. It is episode 459 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. My son doesn't like when I say 459 or 120. He's like, no, Dad, it's 459. All right, son. Episode 459 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. It's Monday, January 15th. The year is 2024. We are presented by DraftKings. Thanks to those of you who have found us on the DraftKings YouTube channel, the DraftKings network as well. Of course, that watch party, Ken Flo, was back on the old channel, the Anik and Florian Podcast YouTube channel, which is a big initiative for us this year. So how'd you like being in studio, watching fights with me, my twin bro, Big Ron, and everything else? Did you enjoy our first watch party or what?
Dude, an absolute blast. We have to do it again. Good times. Absolutely. It just felt like actually we were in the same place watching the fight for a little bit, man. So yeah, absolutely a good time, man.
Do you notice I have a black eye? Can you see that?
I do. So I got a little scratch on the inside of my eye and nose from jiu-jitsu. I jammed my thumb the other day. I look at your eye. I'm like, it looks like he did the same thing I did. I'm an idiot. I actually jabbed myself in the eye and nose with my thumb and scratched my whole face up. But anyways, what the heck happened to you?
Not jiu-jitsu practice. And Pahumpa and I actually are at odds right now anyway, so he probably wouldn't be my coach in the future, if I'm being honest, God, if I actually go back to the Brazilian jiu-jitsu world. But this was my dog who just came up and scratched me in the eye. So for those of you who thought maybe it was my twin brother after our little dust up on Anik Squared, I'm not letting him get close to me to punch me in the eye and give me a black eye. Absolutely not. So this was my dog's doing, and nothing that our great makeup artist Chris Giraldo can't handle on
paper. You weren't able to keep the distance there.
That's right. I can't let you get close. So pay-per-view week is upon us. UFC 297 coming up later this week. We will do our main event challenge. Ken Flo and Brian Petrie will break down, I think, seven fights, and they will spend their $1,000. You guys did pretty well, both of you, undefeated and in the black for UFC Fight Night. Ankalaev versus Walker 2. We'll recap that hog today. We'll also talk to Ray Longo. And then later in the week, we will also talk to Sportsnet's Aaron Bronstetter. He has changed networks, so the foremost Canadian MMA journalist is now back allowed on our airwaves, which is very exciting. So he's got boots on the ground in Toronto. I'm leaving in about 48 hours. So a lot to get to this week. And we will begin with our recap of Magomed Ankalaev and Johnny Walker. It was an outstanding UFC fight night, I thought, overall at the UFC Apex. Jim McMahon in the building, he of Chicago Bears fame. But let us get into this main event, because a lot of our discussion on the podcast last week and even on the watch party leading up to this main event was that relative to his skill set and how good you and I think he is, it had been a long time since Magomed Ankalaev had had his hand raised, even if unbeaten streak remained intact. So he gets Johnny Walker out of there with a huge knockout. It came at 242 of round two, thereby extending his unbeaten streak to 12. And we might just have a new number one light heavyweight contender. Ken Flo, your thoughts on a huge weekend for the Dagestani Magomed Ankalaev?
Yeah, definitely. And first and foremost, I think we do have a number one contender at 205 pounds. He certainly proved that. I think what's exciting more than anything else was his approach in that fight against Johnny Walker. When you're coming off a couple losses, or at least not getting a win anyway, right? No contest, getting a loss, whatever it is. Sometimes you see guys take a more conservative approach. I thought that he balanced his aggression extremely well with his strategy against Johnny Walker. I didn't see a guy who was timid. I didn't see a guy who was necessarily playing it safe. I thought he was playing it smart. He was patient, but still brought the aggression, ended up getting the knockout finish, which I thought he should have done against someone like Johnny Walker. And I thought he proved himself as absolutely elite and deserving of that number one contender spot. And for Johnny Walker, this was a big drop off, man. I'm sure we'll get, get to talking more about him, but what a result for Ankalaev. And just beautiful stuff. Great knockout.
We'll talk to Ray Longo about his wayward Johnny Walker prediction. But for those who suggested that Magomed Ankalaev was prohibitively favored or did not deserve this distinction as a minus 455 or minus 500 betting favorite, he absolutely did. And with respect to Johnny Walker, I do believe in this particular matchup, were they to fight 9 or 10 times, I think Ankalaev is winning most of those fights. There was a foul in round one, which was a little bit unfortunate. Thankfully, it didn't become the prevailing narrative in this fight, but a beautiful right hook, pinpoint follow-up uppercut on the ground. Referee could do nothing but stop the fight. So we congratulate Magomed Ankalaev. And Kenny, obviously, when this belt was vacant late 2022, the fight the promotion put together was Magomed Ankalaev versus Jan Błachowicz. That ended in a draw. And as most of our listenership knows, a month later, it was Glover Teixeira and Jamal Hill for the undisputed UFC light heavyweight title. Jamal Hill won that fight, the Achilles injury and everything else. Alex Pineda is now the champion. And it seems as though the foundation was laid this weekend for a fight, perhaps the headlining act at UFC 300, Alex Pineda in his first light heavyweight title defense against Magomed Ankalaev. Now, Alex Pineda has gone to Instagram and seemingly suggesting that he wants to handle the Jamal Hill business first and then move on to Magomed Ankalaev. I'm just not sure the calendar is going to align. I don't know what Jamal Hill's timeline is, but what are your expectations for how the promotion proceeds without total knowledge of Jamal Hill's health? But what do you think is going to happen right here, right now in this light heavyweight division?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Ankalaev. I think it's Pereira probably buying himself a little bit of time. Pereira is a smart guy, man. When it comes to getting the right fights at the right time, I think he realizes that Jamal Hill, being the former champion, is a much bigger fight from a promotional perspective than, say, a fight against Magomed Ankalaev. You know, a guy who hasn't been around as much. People don't have his name at the tip of their tongues as much. And I think he likes the prospect of going against a guy in Jamal Hill who is, really, for all intents and purposes, a striker. I think he likes those odds way better than, say, a guy like Ankalaev who can take him down. Now, I didn't absolutely love what Ankalaev was saying in his talk about wanting a fight against Pereira, just because he was saying, you know, he would pursue that fight on the feet, that he would not be seeking a takedown. And just based on his approach against Błachowicz in the past, I'm a little hesitant. Maybe he's just saying that to try to lure Pereira in to try to get a takedown. But I don't think that's the best approach against someone like Pereira. Can he? Yeah, I think he's got the power to maybe knock out someone like Pereira. Is that the smartest approach? Probably not. So I think for Pereira, he is going to try to pursue that fight against Jamal Hill. A torn Achilles tendon is one of those things that could potentially render a fighter not the same ever again. I do think it's that bad of an injury. And a lot of times it's like what you think you can do, you really can't. Although you're okay to get back to training, you're not going to feel at the very least 100% the way you did before. And you're talking about staying off of that leg for long periods of time. You're going to add a lot of weight into the equation. So now you got to lose that weight. That weight also bears more weight on the injury itself, which could compound the injury and take it longer to heal. So there's kind of this cyclical thing that happens with Achilles tendons, which could lead to some problems for Jamal Hill. I hope that is not the case. I hope he's on top with his diet and all that stuff, and he's able to transition very quickly. But I don't see him getting back in time before Ankalaev anyway.
So there was a gentleman's agreement between Kevin Holland and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson going into their main event. You may recall that Holland was not going to try to wrestle. And largely, you know, he held up his end of the bargain. I believe maybe he shot one time on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. But perhaps this is just politicking by Magomed Ankalaev. You do hope if he gets a second opportunity at the light heavyweight title that he fights instinctually and plays to his strengths and puts all the martial arts together to try to win a world title, right? I mean, that would be my expectation. Perhaps he feels like if he says he's going to kickbox, that'll be an easier path to actually getting that title fight. But my speculation tells me there's no fucking way Jamal Hill's going to be ready for April 13th. Now, you do have June 29th.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler perhaps would be the headliner over an Alex Pineda title defense. But if you are Alex Pineda and you are thinking about your next title defense, Alex Pineda has also said he wants to defend this title a couple times in short order. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if he fights Magomed Ankalaev at UFC 300. And were he to win, he tries to turn around quickly. But Alex Pineda as a pay-per-view point accruing champion is going to make a lot of money in his next title defense, whether it's UFC 300 and a championship triple header headlined by him, or, you know, fighting in a co-main event underneath Conor McGregor come June 29th. So Alex Pineda's got a lot of money coming his way. It's just a matter of time and finding out who the opponent is. But it sounds like you think he matches up better with Jamal Hill, and I think a lot of the public would agree.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, from what you were saying, I think you bring up some really good points from a business perspective. Hey, I'll put my pride aside and be underneath the Conor McGregor fight, right, to gain those pay-per-view points. I mean, Pereira's no dummy. That would be the biggest payday of his life, no matter who he fought, Ankalaev, Hill, or Joe Schmo. It doesn't matter. If you're right on a Conor McGregor card, you're going to get eyeballs. So, yeah, curious to see what his approach is moving forward. And, you know, I do think there are some good options there for him. And Pereira being the champion at 205 pounds made things a lot more interesting, in my opinion, in the UFC.
There are some rumblings that we could return to Brazil, perhaps for a pay-per-view as early as May. I find it pretty interesting that Amanda Nunes, upon her retirement last summer, used part of her post-fight interview to call on her fellow Brazilian men and women to realize world championships, because that night as she vacated the bantamweight title, there were no Brazilian champions. Since then, Alexandre Pantoja has broken through. Alex Pineda has broken through in a second division. And this weekend, Maida Bueno Silva will try for Uberlandia Minas Gerais to break through as the UFC women's bantamweight champion. So a lot of good things happening in Brazil. And of course, they're all chasing Alex Pineda. But right now, for me, as a fan, I would love to see UFC 300, Pineda versus Ankalaev. I think that's the fight, and I think you make it here in 3 months. Ankalaev got out of the fight unscathed, and we congratulate him, because we might have mentioned this last week or on our watch party, but he had mentioned in our last fighter meeting, you know, sort of stepping outside of himself, either on a microphone or stylistically in a fight, to try to get these bigger fights. And I do think you have to be careful as an athlete to deviate from your fight style or deviate from the way you are on a microphone just to try to get that title fight. You know, the ends don't always justify the means to get there. So I'm happy for Magomed Ankalaev, outstanding performance. And I do think if he can devote some time to learning the English language, he could be an absolute star, because some of these men and women, like, they have personalities, right? Some of them are just fucking dry, but some of these athletes really have personalities that gets lost with that language barrier. So, I'm excited for Magomed Ankalaev. I'm excited to see what the betting line would be. I'd imagine it's probably already out there somewhere in the stratosphere, but I think it would be pretty close. Maybe Alex Pineda a slight favorite, but perhaps not, just given historically how big a betting favorite Magomed Ankalaev has been against most of these title challengers. Kempflo, as far as Johnny Walker is concerned, pretty significant setback here as far as his championship aspirations. What are your thoughts now on the SBG Ireland pupil Johnny Walker moving forward?
Yeah, you know, what I was hoping for was a little bit more substance to his game. What I saw was a guy that was kind of throwing things at the wall and hoping that they would stick. You know, whether it was those back fists that weren't really well planned, they weren't set up well. It was just kind of one of those things like, and not a whole lot's working, let me try this. Okay, this isn't working, let me try this. That's never a good way to approach things, especially in something as intense and calculated as a high-level mixed martial arts fight.
Right.
And while he's extremely dangerous, those aren't techniques that should be taken lightly by an opponent. There's not a whole lot of planning that's going on, in my opinion. It's not like these things were planned, set up. He wasn't luring Ankalaev in. He was just kind of throwing a bunch of crap, and Ankalaev was seeing it coming. And Walker's dangerous enough that if he touches you, he clips you, he can hurt you. And he's relied on that. You know, a lot of times our strengths can become our biggest weakness if we're not aware of it. And to me, I don't see a whole lot of understanding with what he's trying to do, as opposed to he's got some tools in his tool belt and he's just kind of trying out, even if it requires a screwdriver, he's going to take a hammer and still try to use the hammer. So I think he's still trying to figure out that process. I don't know if that's a coaching thing or if that's kind of Johnny Walker on fight night, just kind of letting it all loose and just going, screw it, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. But at a certain point, he's got to look at his game and going, what am I trying to do out there? How am I trying to maximize my skills, my physicality, and my strategy? How do I balance that to get the results? Because I think we're seeing a lot of this inconsistency because of that.
Yeah. All right. So that's the main event. Co-main event was to be Manel Kopp against Mateusz Nicolau, but Manel Kopp for the second time in his UFC career missed weight. I want to table that for a second, if I could, Kenny, because I'd imagine Ray Longo might have some strong opinions on another weight miss for Manel Kopp, who did acknowledge some illness and some antibiotics, but certainly most of the fighters who have never missed weight don't want to hear that noise. And quite frankly, I don't blame them. So the new look co-main event was Jim Miller against Gabriel Benitez. And as we mentioned on our watch party, and if you did miss our watch party, I kindly ask you to go check it out on the Anakin Florian Podcast YouTube channel. We really enjoyed it. And I do think humbly, it's some of the best content that we have put out there. But we talked on that watch party about you and me sitting in Bristol, Connecticut in 2008 when Jim and Dan Miller were signed by the UFC. I think they were fighting for the IFL or something at the time, whatever the fuck it was, right? And we show a full screen graphic that the UFC had signed these Miller brothers, and now here they are, or at least Jim is, you know, 16 years later, still getting it done. He submits Gabriel Benitez with a face crank, came at 325 around three. Jim Miller joining Magomed Ankalaev, one of four performance of the night bonus winners. And what else can you say about Jim Miller? I know they don't like the word winningest in the UK, but no man nor woman has won more UFC fights nor competed in more UFC fights than Jim fucking Miller. What else can you say?
Just a model of durability, a model of reliability. When you look at, you know, talk about weight cuts, he hasn't missed a weight cut in the UFC. And there's a lot of things that can happen. And you mentioned it at the watch party. This is a guy who's been dealing with Lyme disease. It's very easy to forget, myself included, that this is a debilitating thing for anybody, let alone a professional athlete in a fight sport. Okay, that is insane to me. This is a guy that was fighting at the same time when I was fighting, when my old ass was fighting way back in the day. He's been around since then. He's been consistent since then. And what I think what's most impressive, John, is the fact that, you know, in some cases you could argue it's a criticism, right? No question about that. But the fact that he's largely kept that same skill set and has been able to utilize that throughout his career is amazing. I think a lot of it has to do with he's taking the right fights, but forget about that. Even the fact that he's doing that and taking smart fights, fights that make sense, the fact that he's still around competing and winning is insane to me. Like the Jim Millers, the Clay Guidas, even the Diego Sanchez to a certain point, the Nate Diaz's, like that is wild. It's mind blowing, that level of toughness, that level of durability. He's a rare gem, man. And congratulations, Jim Miller, who keeps doing it, wants to fight at UFC 300. I hope he gets it done. You know, as you mentioned, on the watch party, he wants to fight way past UFC 300. So I'm not doubting him. I could see him fighting for another couple of years, actually.
True martial artist. And when you look at some of the guys that he has beaten, some of just the lesser known guys, whether it's Nicolas Mata or Gabriel Benitez, it's not as though he's been some massive betting favorite against these guys, Kenny. He was minus 120 or so at close this weekend to beat Gabriel Benitez. So these are close fights on paper. You know, the odds makers in a broad sense know. And a lot of people, though, were salivating on Jim Miller. Jim Miller by submission. Congratulations to all those who cashed, including Kenny Florian. Now, you mentioned the Lyme disease, and one thing that Jim Miller said this week during his media availability was he was on the cusp of the top 10 when he got bitten by a tick who was carrying Lyme disease. And part of the virus can attack the brain and the memory system in the brain. So he was referencing conversations with his wife and things that his wife would bring up, essentially, Kenny, from 2015 to 2017, like, this dude has no recollection of a lot of things that happened. So It's one thing to be the Cal Ripken Jr. of mixed martial arts, right? To be the long-lasting guy, the longevity guy. I mean, that says nothing of the fact that nobody has had their hand raised more in there. But it's one thing to do that the way Cal Ripken Jr. did it, largely in a non-contact sport where you're standing at third base for most of the game. To do that in fight sport, in combat sports with Lyme disease is otherworldly. And as everyone suggests that we will never see another dynasty like the one Bill Belichick created in New England, I agree. We're never going to see anybody do what Jim Miller is doing. I mean, if this dude gets to 30 UFC wins, I feel pretty convicted in saying that record's going to hold the test of time.
Absolutely. I mean, is he at 7 hours or past 7 hours or anyway, close to there anyway? Yeah. Just insane that he's been able to do that. And there's no real hint of him slowing down at a certain point, right? It's not like he's getting clipped with a light shot and his knees are just buckling and he's dropping to the floor like some guys that we've seen. I think he's still handling fights with a certain level of intelligence and strategy. He's going to be a measuring stick for a lot of guys. I don't see him, you know, challenging for a belt anytime in the near future, but I don't know, maybe, you know, if he's able to start to get some more high level wins. But either way, just the fact that he has stayed busy like this and consistent is just next level tough. There's tough, and then there's Jim Miller tough.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
So in terms of that contention that you mentioned, this is a division that makes it very hard in which to contend. You know, Bobby Green has been a name that has been bandied about as a possible opponent for Jim Miller at UFC 300. And I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, Bobby Green has been ranked for the last several years. He's a guy who has headlined, I think, thrice now for the combat sports leader. So not out of the realm of possibility that Jim Miller works his way back to the rankings. But in terms of UFC 300, there were a couple names that Jim Miller trotted out there, right? Matt Brown, Paul Felder, Brock Lesnar. I mean, the Brock Lesnar fight obviously is not going to happen, so we don't necessarily need to reference that. Although, I'd be lying if I said I was totally disinterested in seeing Jim Miller try to rip a Kimura against Brock Lesnar. But Paul Felder seemingly has a source that suggests that the UFC is not interested in him versus Jim Miller. And with respect to my dear friend Paul Felder, the Iron Lung, you can understand why maybe the UFC would want to use one of the guys that's in an active competition cycle or somebody who is on the roster, or maybe try to build up somebody like Patty Pimblett to fight Jim Miller, as opposed to, you know, getting somebody out of the broadcast booth for a one-off. I think the Matt Brown fight, just given the legendary statuses of both men, how about Jim Miller versus Matt Brown for like a spot in the Hall of Fame or something? You know, I think that fight makes a lot of sense. I think the Bobby Green fight makes sense. I think a Patty Pimblett fight makes sense. I know I'm throwing a lot at you. Cody's going to populate the top 15 for us here at 155 pounds, Kenny, but off the top of your brainstem, who do you think, or who would you like to see Jim Miller fight? Because he is going to compete at UFC 300.
Yeah. Listen, I actually like the fight against Felder. Call me crazy. I think if there's a guy that you could do a one-off against, it would be a guy like Felder. Both these guys are 155 pounders or fought in that division before anyway. Matt Brown at 170 pounds, I think is a bit ambitious. I still think Matt Brown is one of the more dangerous guys when it comes to a Muay Thai clinch. And again, just the history of Matt Brown, he's not in there to win rounds. He's in there to destroy you as quickly as possible. And, you know, because Jim Miller likes to do some of that work in that clinch from that collar tie, while he's very good there, I think Matt Brown is just a little too big, a little bit too powerful. And one of the best clinch fighters that I've seen from a striking perspective in a very long time. So I don't love that fight at 170 pounds because I imagine Matt Brown would never be able to make 155.
Right.
But, you know, I actually like the Felder-Miller fight. I actually thought it kind of made sense if there's going to be a one-off. It's not like Miller is on this, as of right now, on this trajectory towards fighting for a belt in the 155-pound division at this point. So, I don't know. I thought it was juicy enough, you know, maybe the two guys from a similar era, that makes sense. But, you know, Bobby Green in there, I have no problem. I think that'd be a really fun fight as well.
Yeah. Oh, selfishly, I would love to crack a mic today and campaign for my dear friend, the Iron Lung, Paul Felder. Right. And I do agree with you that it does make some sense. But if the UFC doesn't have a guarantee that that Paul's going to continue after that fight, perhaps that's not something that they want to lean into. When I look at the lightweight top 15, some of these guys are matched up. Bobby Green has the number 14 next to his name. Beneil Dariush, number 7 in the world, doesn't necessarily have a fight, right? Like if Jim Miller was really trying to vault toward contention, you know, he could try to call out one of those guys near the top of the division, but a lot of those guys are matched up, whether it's Armand Sarukyan or Mateusz Gamrot, right? We obviously have Rafael Dos Anjos, Benoit Saint-Denis, Dustin Poirier. A lot of these guys have fights right now, Kenflo.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I do feel like it does make sense. Like a Jim Miller-Paul Felder fight doesn't screw anything up in regards to the top 15. So,
right.
It doesn't ruin the UFC's plans as far as their next contender or screwing anything up as far as some kind of an order or guys that they'd like to see face someone for the belt. So I don't know. I think it'd be a different story, say, if Paul Felder or Jim Miller were in that top 10, then I'd say, that makes sense. But, there's certainly at 155, there are so many options. You're talking about, again, probably my biased opinion, that the toughest division in the UFC. I'm curious to see what their approach is going to be there.
And as far as Matt Brown is concerned, he is coming off the best weight cut of his career. I was actually in the gym with him before his last fight. Maybe it was against Court McGee. And he was like, dude, I'm 169. I'm just enjoying being in here right now. So, but that being said, there's no way that he could make 56. So that would be a welterweight fight. And I think when the UFC looks at UFC 300, we're probably going to have 15 fights, which is a broadcaster's nightmare, but it's not like you can go 16, 17 fights unless you want to look for a new play-by-play guy. So when you think about novelty fights and Matt Brown and Jim Miller, there are only so many slots. So it might be a good way to sort of kill two birds with one stone. Both of those guys have pined to fight at UFC 300, perhaps have them fight against each other. But you're right, Jim Miller would be relinquishing a lot of size, and I don't recall him ever competing at 170 pounds, certainly not in the UFC unless I'm missing something, right? So this would be a first time for Jimmy Miller. But either way, congratulations to a real good egg and, in my mind, the future Hall of Famer, Jim Miller. All right, Ray Longo coming up in 60 seconds, but DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL playoffs, is bringing you an offer that'll help make the playoffs absolutely electrifying. New customers can bet $5 on any game and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. So the Green Bay Packers, how about it? Riding high after taking out the boys. Now, 9.5-point betting underdogs at San Francisco in the divisional round of the playoffs. We'll see if Jordan Love can do it again against a San Francisco team favored by many to win the whole thing. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code AFPOD, one word, AFPOD. New customers can bet just $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code AFPOD. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That is 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/football for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, we missed Ray Longo on the watch party, but you know you're always getting him on a Monday. Let us get to the award-winning Ray Longo Minute.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Good morning, Ray.
How was the watch party?
The watch party was great. I did say, full disclosure, until we get your setup completely locked in, I just didn't want to take the risk going live, right? Heidi Dean, who is one of our foremost listeners, this shot looks like shit all the fucking time. It's not you. I'm just not centered up. So people get on me for getting upset about the technical stuff. But no, I didn't want to take the risk when we are live. And I guess we can share this with the listeners right now. One of our aspirations for 2024. We're sitting here. It is Monday, January 15th. It's 11:34 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. But we tape this pig live to tape. Our goal in the next few weeks is to actually go live with you every Monday around 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Do our recap live, and then we would do our predictions and our other content later in the week to try to get at you guys as soon as humanly possible. In order to make that happen, we're getting Ray Longo his own setup. I know it's overdue. We're 9 years into the show, right? But we're getting Ray Longo a setup at his gym and at his house. But I just didn't want to take the risk on the live watch party. But obviously, the fans were upset to not see your shining face when we went live Saturday night.
Oh, man. Thank you, Minutemen, for being patient. I appreciate it. Kenny was almost... I thought you fell asleep during that, Kenny. I don't know what you were looking like. Hey, listen, a couple of things. Before we get started, I heard you talking about Jim Miller. I am absolutely blown away by this guy. I don't know. I mean, Kenny, is it me? I think he's actually gotten better. I really believe he looks better to me. Now, again, it could be, you know, maybe competition. You could say, but the guy, how old is the guy? How old is he now?
Got to be like 35.
He's not 35.
You think he's older than that? Maybe 37? Well, he was fairly young when he got to the UFC, even though he had a lot of, he was born in 1983. So that makes him 40.
40 years old.
Yeah.
And you're trying to piss the guy off as a 35.
I know. Yeah. 40 years old. What is that? Young. 40 years of age. He's a man. He's 40.
I think he fights young. I'm 40. 40's no joke, man. Especially for the lighter weight guys, you know? So right. I don't know. I think the guys, I put him in the Hall of Fame tomorrow. That's going to be a hard record to beat, man. What's he got, 43, 44 fights in the UFC?
Yeah, 43 professional wins, 26 wins in the UFC is just a remarkable feat. I remember when Stefan Struve said that he was going to be the first UFC fighter to 50 appearances. And I'm not sure Jim Miller's going to get to 50. He's going to get close. But I do believe, as I said earlier, Ray, like, these records are going to withstand the test of time. Like, I don't think anybody's get. We got a few guys who are close right now. Even Neil Magny potentially could get to 26 or 27 UFC wins. But Jim Miller's the only guy I can see getting to 30 UFC wins before he hangs him up.
I mean, which is crazy. I mean, listen, you test clean for 50 times. I think you get a jacket. This guy's almost at 50 fights in the UFC. I think that's pretty fucking cool. They got to do something with him because... I don't know. I thought he was great, man. It's not like he's not getting hit. You know, he's walking through those punches. He still has a great chin, great awareness, tenacious, pushing forward. I don't know. Hats off to Jim Miller, man. Whatever you're doing, pass us the secret because I think he's looking phenomenal.
Kenny and I reserved our conversation on Manel Kopp's weight miss until you came on the air. So I do want to get to that in a minute. But you might have heard what we were saying about Jim Miller with regards to UFC 300. This is a man who competed at UFC 100, UFC 200. One of these 30 or so slots at UFC 300 is going to be reserved for Jim Miller. Any name on the tip of your tongue, Ray, as to who you'd like to see Jim Miller in there with come April 13th?
I mean, I got no name on the tip of my tongue, but he's not going to turn down any fight. I think you can give anybody you want. So,
right? No, you're right.
You know, all
right.
He's definitely a company man for sure, to the extreme.
All right. So, those of our longtime listeners certainly remember that you were there with Kenny Florian in Vancouver when he was cutting weight for his featherweight debut against Diego Nunes back in 2011. And if you are a first time listener, I'm sorry, Kenny, but I need to be a man of veracity here. Kenny was essentially staring death in the face. They were like holding his brother Keith back, who was trying to go get his brother out of the sauna so he didn't fucking perish in there. And Ray Longo had a front row seat to a lot of this. So I bring it up in the context of the second UFC weight miss for Manel Kopp this weekend. And you know, I'm not an analyst in MMA. I'm a play-by-play guy, but it doesn't mean I can't be critical in certain spots. And I think there is criticism to be levied at Manel Kopp. You're a title contender that a lot of people want to see fight for the title. This is a huge setback as far as I'm concerned, Ray.
Yeah, not only that, and when you have a big mouth like Manuel Cape does, you got to back that shit up.
Man. I love you to call him Manuel Cape.
Well, wait, no, what, how do you pronounce it?
Manel Kopp, like Manel like Kopp. A cap almost, but Manel yeah. Kopp.
Kopp, yeah. I don't know. The E is at the end of the B, you pronounce the A, no Kopp. All right. I don't know. What do I know? I failed English. No, I mean, when you talk like he talks and you have that type of bravado, man, you got to back that shit up, man. This is when it looks, man, if he never said anything, you didn't know who the guy was, it maybe passes by a little easier. But the fact that you're so outspoken, and I like Kopp, I really do. I think he's a great fighter. But you got to make the weight, man. You can't, it's just so unprofessional, and you've been around for so long. Unless he was sick or something, you know, happened, that's kind of excusable, but that's a really shitty look for him.
Kenny, I just have to get in here for a second. If you are sick, right, you may get the benefit of the doubt if you have not missed weight prior. Now, I believe it was before the Ode Osborne fight. Manel Kopp ended up having a huge KO, and Ode Osborne perhaps waywardly took that fight. So it's hard to blame Nicolau for not taking this fight, given the weight miss for Manel Kopp. You can harken back to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson against Michel Pereira, right? When you see a guy miss weight by that many pounds and produce knockouts prior, you know, sometimes it's hard to go through with the fight. I support Nicolau's decision.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on that. I think that this sport and every win is so damn important that you don't want to give up any of those huge advantages. Listen, if it's like 1 or 2 pounds, I get it. But why would you put yourself at a disadvantage like that? Because it's not like the UFC turns around, or any organization for that matter, turns around and goes, you know what? We're not going to really count that as a loss. We're going to give you that next opportunity and move you up the ladder. It never works out that way. They never just erase a loss. And that L is forever on your Wikipedia page. And, you know, for Manel Kopp, I think it's just unprofessional. This is a guy who's a very talented dude. And I get it. Listen, I probably fought at least 4 fights on antibiotics with, you know, whether it's a staph infection I was dealing with. And I used to bloat like crazy. I would retain water like crazy if I got on a plane ride, if someone was eating spaghetti next to me, if I took antibiotics. Like, it was so much harder for me to cut weight. I understand that process, but I still did it, as shitty as it was. And Manel Kopp needs to understand he needs to go in there, do his job. But anyways, hey, Ray, you know, we have these big fights, obviously, this weekend, man. Championship fight at 185 pounds. Before I get your thoughts on how the fight is going to go down, what do you think about the fact that a champion, or when you kind of break through and you become a champion, especially when you beat someone like an Israel Adesanya, what does that do for the confidence of that new champion, right? Like when I see Weidman in a similar situation when he defeated Anderson Silva for the first time. What does that do to a fighter? Teddy Atlas talks about that 30% improvement when you break through. Do you think that's true? And how do you think this plays into Sean Strickland's mentality in this fight?
Oh, man, it has to be a huge boost. And then with Weidman, too, let me tell you, after he beat Anderson Silva, you know, at the press conference, he was almost disassociated with everything when he was sitting up there. And they asked him, what about a rematch? He said, yeah, let's do it. Like, he couldn't give a shit about anything. When Weidman was really Weidman, just it was a different feel, man. It really was. But he sat up there, let's just do the next fight. He didn't give a shit who you gave him. And he was going to do it again, and he did do it again. So with that being said, I think Strickland's a different cat, man. I think he's... I agree. I do agree with Teddy, though. You know, whatever the percentage is, you have to draw energy from a win like that. You know what I mean? But he's going to go. Here's the problem, Kenny. He's going to go from a highly, highly technical guy to a guy that's going to try to make this like just a complete chaotic mess. And I think Strickland has the cardio. It definitely, if the other guy gets tired, it will be a bad night for him. But there's a big, strong guy who I wasn't given any chance to coming up. And then he just started winning fights. He just always looked like he was gassing a little bit. He had the nasal problem. not the most technical guy, but some of those guys, Kenny, have bricks in their hands too. You know, they tap.
Hey, he's got a brick for. I think he's got a brick for a head as well. Like he was walking through. He was walking through those shots against Whitaker, continue to come forward like a juggernaut. Do you think he's able to do this against Strickland? Because Strickland's more of a technical striker, right? It's like the accumulation of blows is what gets you for the most part. Do you think Strickland can put Drickus's lights out based on what you've seen?
I think I think if Drickus, maybe not at the beginning, but if Drickus gets tired, this guy's gonna listen, you gotta remember Strickland's used to sparring 15 rounds in a row. That's not gonna rattle him, but if you watch his sparring, it's all, I never see it with the grappling put in. I always see the stand up, and he could do that forever. I got guys in the gym, I think, that are kind of similar that could do that. But that's what a way it looks that he's a steady Eddie guy. But you know, the guy loves to fight. He's really, really good. But the takedown defense will be tested. And if the other guy doesn't have the cardio, like a Marab, to keep going and going and going, he's not winning the fight. But if he can get it done, like early and get in there and make it dirty, which I don't even think he tries to do. I just think it's who he is. I'm excited for the fight, though, man. I really want to see it.
I am, too. There's a phrase in sports, you know, ice water in his veins, about a fighter or an athlete just able to rise to any occasion and sort of check pressure in its proper place. And those visuals that I have referenced of Sean Strickland as Israel Adesanya was making that walk in Sydney are embedded upon my brain. I just find it hard to believe that this moment is going to be too big for Sean Strickland. One thing I wanted to throw your way, if I could. So Duke Rufus, there was a video that was purposed on Instagram this weekend from 20, 25 years ago about Duke Rufus talking about defense and martial arts as self-defense. And he talked about all the great martial artists, right? Wrestlers can't get taken down. Jiu-jitsu guys at the highest level don't get submitted. You know, strikers at the highest level, right? Their defense is great. Floyd Mayweather, you couldn't hit him. I feel like Sean Strickland's defense is sort of an underrated component in the lead up to this fight. I just feel like that tight, high guard and his ability to sort of minimize damage against athletes not named Alex Pereira that just have that otherworldly power and sophistication when it comes to their striking. I feel like Sean Strickland's defense could be absolutely huge in trying to extend Duplessis and minimizing some of the early damage, Raymond. Any thoughts on that?
No, 100%. The guy's got great defense. Look, he's got the Philly shell down, and he knows himself. He knows what he could do. The only problem I see is that there's no way to train for like a Duplessis. You know what I mean? He just looks that awkward to me. From the first time I saw him, I think maybe he's getting a little better, but it's the awkwardness, how he deals with that. He's not going to go in there and like outbox him from a boxing standpoint. That's not happening, but who knows? He starts getting punched in the elbow, the shoulder, you know, he's getting clubbed over the head. I got to see how it plays out in like the first couple of minutes. I think we'll get a great idea, but I don't think he's used to what this guy is going to bring, though, which is just, it looks like chaos to me. But I think Strickland walks right through that. I think he's a natural fighter. I do think that, you know, winning that title in the manner that he did, man, if that doesn't get him 20 or 30% mentally better, nothing ever will. So he's got a lot of good things going into this fight, but if he was fighting a more traditional guy, I say I'd go Strickland, you know, 100%. I still think we'll win the fight, but it's the awkwardness and the craziness of some of these guys that throws you off, but it'll only throw him off for a couple of minutes. I think he'll pick up on it and he'll find the holes in that guy's game pretty quickly and take advantage of it.
We are going to get a main event prediction from Ray Longo here before we get him on out of there. But I just want to sort of talk about this fight in terms of fan enthusiasm, right? Because Kenny and Ray, you guys know how excited I get for every singular UFC title fight. But I'd be lying to our audience if I looked into the camera and said I am as excited for Maeda Bueno Silva and Raquel Pennington as I am for Sean Strickland and Drakus Duplessis, right? But I am so excited for this UFC middleweight championship fight. And I think part of it, even though I put Izzy on a pedestal, is that, Kenny, this is the first middleweight championship fight since 2017. Michael Bisping versus George St. Pierre that doesn't feature the last style bender, Israel Adesanya. So I think part of the overwhelming excitement from the fan base for this main event at UFC 297 is that it just feels new and fresh. Whereas we've had a, you know, we have had some middleweight title stinkers. Adesanya Cannonier comes to mind, right? But this matchup, Kemflo, just feels bulletproof as far as your entertainment value.
Yeah, absolutely. Both guys are just extremely aggressive. You have a new champion here. We're not quite sure how he's going to look against this very unique style from DDP. You know, I think there's a lot of different ways that this fight can go as well. I mean, I was a little bit late starting the show just because I was doing my tape study and I'm still like, gosh, what the hell is going to happen here? Yet to make my pick, but yeah, I think it's a fascinating fight for all of those reasons, man. We have new blood in that division. And these are two aggressive fighters who love to move forward, who do take different approaches as well. And I think it's going to be a fascinating fight while it lasts.
Hey, Ray, yeah. Any idea who's the betting favorite right now?
Man, I would say it's, I got to go with Strickland, but it's probably pretty close though.
You're all over it. How good are you? Sean Strickland, -135. Drakus Duplessis is +114. Forced to make a prediction here on a Monday, 5 or 6 days out, Ray. Who do you like in the main event in Toronto?
I have to go with Sean Strickland. I think he's, you know, throughout the years, he's sparred probably every different type of person he could find. He seems like that guy. So I don't think he'll be that thrown off by it. I think he knows what to expect. And I'm going to go with Sean Strickland.
All right, you need a win because you had Johnny Walker last week. I guess.
Yes.
What'd you make of Magomed Ankalaev? Pretty good fighter, huh?
Let me tell you something, Kenny. That uppercut against the fence, you know, you'd rather be knocked out because the pain that guy felt. Like it would have been better if he just got knocked out. That pain had to be. Dude, that was a shot from hell, man.
Dead on shot, too.
Oh, man. Imagine having a freebie like that on a guy that's already knocked out.
His head was bouncing right into the fist at the same time. It bounced off the cage and came forward and just pow.
Yeah. I think, that was good, man. I feel bad for John Walker, but that was a bad, bad shot, man. Holy crap.
All right. Two other things before we let you fly. You know, Chris Weidman has a new favorite t-shirt. It's the newly designed Longo Mafia t-shirt available right now at johnanik.com. You see, he's doing Aljamain Sterling's podcast and he just can't take that fucking shirt off, right?
I tell you, I just seen that. These guys are funny. But I'd like you to refrain from the word mafia. We know there is no such thing, John.
That's right. But let me get a little bit serious on you because I've talked about this before, but bro, like, Israel Adesanya is not going to wear a Eugene Behrman t-shirt. And part of that is because there's an underlying friction to that relationship. Now that can be good. I mean, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady had friction and became the greatest duo in NFL history. But the way your guys all wear your merchandise and want to rep you loud and proud just speaks to how good a human being you are and the way you've continued to connect across decades and generations of fighters. So I don't have a question here, but when I see these guys go out of their way to wear your merchandise or drop your name, it just speaks to how elite a human being you are and just the overwhelming impact you have had on so many lives in that tri-state area. So I hope it's not lost on you just how much these guys appreciate you, because I know it's just him wearing a funny t-shirt, but it's because these guys have a lot of love for Raymond Peter Longo.
Oh, man. Thank you very much for that, John. Yeah, no, listen, man, we had a great, it was a great call, guys. I do believe like things are changing. I'm getting older. The guys are getting younger. But man, I was telling the Weidman around me. I miss those days when those guys first walked into the gym. And again, that was like the 2.0 because the Sarahs, the Dragos, the Lukes. I mean, we had it's just been a great ride for me as a coach. And we'll see what happens in the next couple of years. It should be interesting. But man, Aya Quinta walked into that gym as a 19-year-old. They threw him in the octagon with George Sotiropoulos, who was picked to be the next 55 champ. And what I saw in there was unbelievable. And I just, fell in love with that kid. But just the balls and the tenacity and the technique. He was, You know, if injuries didn't get Al, I think he would have definitely 100% been a champion. But, you know, people don't realize he fought probably 6-7 fights, banged up when most guys probably couldn't fight. So, you know, Weidman coming into the gym, and then, you know, and then we grab Aljo and Marab. It was a great run. It's a great, you know, it was a great period of my life. And these guys, I really appreciate it. I'm surprised when I see it, but I did happen to see that thing with Aljo and Weidman. I don't even know if that was when Chris came in. I don't even know when they did the podcast, but thank you for that. And I appreciate those guys when they do that type of shit. It's really makes an old guy feel young again.
Well, when Ken Flo was in LA, I was trying to get him to open Florian Fusion West. And it seems to me like a Longo Weidman MMA in Las Vegas would be an eventuality, right? I mean, like, you like the snow, Ray? I mean, I guess you're a guy they're never going to get out of New York, but it seems like you guys should have a brick and mortar there in Vegas at some point here.
Man, yeah, I'll tell you what. Basically, everybody's all over the place at this point. So, you know, listen, people got to live their lives. They got to move on. I think it sucks because I like, you know, it's almost is like a family. You like everybody,
yeah,
you know, in the gym together and working. Even when Weidman came back and Aljo was there, Al's there, it's good stuff, you know. Now, you know, the younger guys got to pick up the slack and hopefully do the same thing. But, you know, we're in a changing world now, guys. I don't know if you noticed. You know, it's getting a little wacky. So
it is. It's rough out there.
Man, I admire the old school shit, man. I just do. And, you know, whatever. It's all good. But I don't even know what the question was. But
there was no question, really. But before I let you go, I am going to hit you with a hard-hitting question on the way out. What are your expectations for the number one bantamweight contender, may Rob Dwalishvili, against Henry Cejudo coming up here in about a month or so?
I think I haven't been involved with the camp. You know, I've talked to, you know, obviously I got guys out there that are training, but I expect him to do the same thing he always does. He's just going to overwhelm him. And I think if Henry's not really prepared for that, I mean, he's got to find a way to stop Marab, right? So he either has to out wrestle him or he's has to knock him out. And I think it's going to be a hard thing to do. I don't think he's knocking him out. I think Marab's got a great chin, and Marab throws hard too. And that, you know, the way he enters those takes, you're going to get hit, like, you know, one way or the other. So he commits when he goes in there, and you'd have to catch him out of nowhere, I think, to get him. But I think he's just going to, you know, do the same thing he does to everybody, unless Henry could change that.
All right, Ray Longo Minute every week here on the Anakin Florian Podcast. You can find Ray on X at Ray Longo MMA. He's also on Instagram, Ray Longo 9358 or something like that. Has the bonus check come in yet?
No.
So I know the United States Postal Service is not what it once was, but can you please fucking check the mail or have your wife do that? Because I sent this thing 2 weeks ago. It's January 15th. I'm getting a little nervous.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Man. So the checks in the checks.
Yeah,
in the mail.
Everybody else has already cashed theirs.
So the check is in the mail. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Unbeknownst to me, my wife sent you a holiday card. So then when I got home from UFC 296, I sent you a holiday card with a check in there. So hopefully, you know, Mrs. Longo didn't throw it away as duplicate mail.
I'll tell you what.
He's going to text me later today.
Anything's possible, but we'll look. Anything's possible in this house, though. So not ruling anything.
Right, you only get one check, so we're not writing another one. So if that's it, you know, you can't.
There was only three checks in the checkbook.
Right. Hey, where's Lucky this week? Are you at the gym?
No, I'm at the house.
She's in quarantine. Where's
Lucky? Luckily, my wife's home, so she's got a corralled in the kitchen.
Okay.
Keep her occupied. This is the problem. This was a great show, guys. There was no barking.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Well, I referenced Heidi Dean earlier, and she called me this week about my wardrobe for UFC 297. But she did say, before I let you go, you got to get Ray Longo a better setup. No dog. She said she doesn't want the white. She said she doesn't want like the white string on the headphones. So, Heidi, we're working on it. We apologize. Content is king, but we're trying to shore up the studio as well.
No, I happen to like this equipment a lot, man.
It looks great. It looks fantastic.
Really, Heidi, you don't like this?
It looks great. I love it.
I feel like I'm taking oxygen to do
this. I know. That's what I was going to say. I'm going to be on oxygen in a few hours.
You know what's horrible? I think Cody said Nice headphones. Yeah, I got to get it. You know, look, John, I'm jealous when I look at your setup now. It's absolutely phenomenal. I'm sitting here with this fucking shit over here. I don't know. We're going to get it straightened out.
Well, I've invested a lot of money into this studio and a lot of money sort of into these visuals. So hopefully it translates. My visual is getting a little bit blurry. We're almost there. But Ray Longo every week here on the Pro. And the next watch party, I think, might be Super Bowl weekend on that Saturday night. So we'll have you locked and loaded there, because no Anakin Florian podcast watch party would be complete without the star of the show.
Oh, man, I would love to watch a fight with you guys.
It'll be fun. No, we'll do it next time.
I got to go back and check out how it was. You started from the prelims right through with just the
main card. So just the co-main event and the main event. So it's a quick take. Dude, I think you're going to really enjoy it.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have done that.
We get to
debates. We bet against each other on the fights.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Just
a lot of
busting to the extreme. We just go.
There was a lot of that between John and Jason. Yeah, it was.
Oh, man, that's good. That's good stuff, man.
Yeah, no shortage of monozygotic, identical twin on twin crime. We were going at each other pretty good. We've been fighting a lot recently. That's not why I have this little shiner on my right eye, though. That's courtesy of my dog, if you want to know, Ray.
Yeah.
All right, Ray. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, buddy. And we will talk to you next week to recap UFC 297.
All right, guys. Look, I really enjoyed a nice, quiet show. I hope everybody appreciates this.
We did, too.
Thanks, buddy. This was huge. My man.
There he is. All right,
guys.
Ray.
Easy. I'll see you next week.
Ray Longo Minute every week here on the Anik and Florian podcast. All right, congratulations to Mario Bautista. Biggest win of his career against Ricky Simone. Bruno Fajeda as well over Phil Haas. Kenny, I feel for Phil Haas, man, right? Like, so much desire to be great, so much commitment to be great, so much athleticism to be great. But, you know, his chin's like on my level. We just can't take a shot. And I'm not in the retiring fighter business, but, you know, maybe give him a wrestler next time out. But it's just real tough. He's got a lot of physical gifts. The commitment is there, but he can't take a shot.
Yeah, all those things are very true, unfortunately, for Phil. And, I think that's what's so frustrating is that for guys who have seen him in the gym and for what you see, even when he's out there, he looks fantastic. He looks like he can be a world beater, but without that durability, it's a major vulnerability. And what makes things worse is that you have a division, right? Any division, especially in the elite level in the UFC, everybody is a damn shark. And everyone's watching tape, everyone's studying you, and they're going, I'm just going to smash you in the chin, bud, and you're out. Right. So, it's kind of like the verdict is out on what they need to do against someone like Phil Haas. And that means that either he needs a break or his defense is going to have to be at a completely different level if he wants to restructure what he's doing in the UFC. So, unfortunate for him. But that Brazilian dude is tough, man. There's a reason they call him the Hulk. My goodness.
I was just going to say, sort of in closing, not at all trying to take away from Bruno Fajeda. Forgettable weekend for Phil Haas, but Bruno Fajeda is certainly a name to keep an eye on. All right, thank you all for watching. Thanks to everybody for watching the watch party. If you did miss it, we do kindly ask you to check it out on the Anakin Florian Podcast YouTube channel. Let us know what you think. If that is something you like, it will be back next month for the fight night on Super Bowl weekend. Also, don't forget, johnanik.com. If you like the merchandise that we are wearing right now, I got the Miami Vice design on. Ken Flo's wearing the toy design. All of our new designs are available right now at johnanik.com. Don't forget, Bilal Muhammad, Jason Anik. Remember the show live every Thursday on the Anik and Florian Podcast YouTube channel. Kenny Florian, martialarts.com is live. Be sure to check that out as well. And as I always say, my favorite Instagram follow right now, Argus Integrated Defense. Can't let them get close. Thanks to Ray Longo, our executive producer, Cody Merrow. We are back on Wednesday or Thursday. We will talk to Sportsnet's Aaron Bronstetter and Brian Petrie and Ken Flo have predictions for UFC 297, Strickland versus Du Plessis. With that, for Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Thank you all for listening, for watching. Tell your friends. We'll be back with you later in the week. Until then, yo later.
Cornbread. Cornbread. Oh, he's cornbread. Cornbread. He likes to mix in a bowl. the soul to the bread. He's cornbread.
Cornbread.
He's cornbread.
Cornbread.
Life is so precious. Do the best that you can. Keep your hands on the bar. Hit the open man. He's cornbread.
Cornbread.
He's cornbread.
Cornbread.
He's cornbread.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.